Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in to Keep Chopping Wood. I'm your host, Zach Goodall, and today we're going over a little rapid recap on the Jaguars versus Chargers game, in which the Jaguars were completely embarrassed by the San Diego Chargers by a score of 38-14. And I wouldn't even take those last 14 points by the Jaguars into like account, because it was garbage time football, exactly what we've been preaching that Blake Bortles isn't, which is a garbage time quarterback, but that's exactly what that score was at the end of the game. Today I'm bringing in Mike Kay from First Coast News to kind of recap the game, give some thoughts on who stood out, who didn't, and the future of this team. And but I'm going to go ahead and start off with giving some of my thoughts. I'd like to go ahead and say that I think the offense has taken a step back from where we saw them last year. They started off this game poorly and never got in tune with it. I think there was some questionable coaching calls from Greg Olsen, the offensive coordinator, where they've really been trying to make these wide receiver screens and running back screens work, and they just haven't been. We all complained about that after the Green Bay game on the 4th-and-1, but we don't need to get back into that. But my tally was about 5 screens run throughout the San Diego game, and I'm not sure if any of them ended up being positive yardage. So the coaching staff's going to really have to look into some of their play calling, because so far it's just not been good. And the defense has looked mediocre. The run game really took a step back on defense this week, as Melvin Gordon, who started off his career last year without a single rushing touchdown, ended up rushing for one today with 102 yards, as well as Danny Woodhead putting together 27 yards on 3 attempts before being taken out by Telvin Smith in the first quarter on a knee and I believe head injury as well, but I can't be too certain on that. It looked like he was hurting a bit in his head, but his knee seemed pretty bad as well. So the rushing defense really seemed to take a step back, and then Phillip Rivers did what he always does to the Jaguars defense, and he just kind of threw all over them. He threw for 220 yards and 4 touchdowns today, and they ended up taking him out of the game at the end and replaced him with Kellen Clemens because Rivers' job was done. So on that note, I'm going to go ahead and bring on Mike Kay from First Coast News, and he's going to give us some of his thoughts on the game. Mike, thanks for joining.
Yeah, sure thing. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So what's your rapid reaction to the game, and what does the outcome say about the Jaguars for the rest of the year?
Well, I think you need to take the last wins in context. So when we look at the Packers' loss in context, it was complete game they played. They just played a much better team. This one, they played a much better team and then play well at all. Like, literally everything that they put out was trash, if you will. And probably in their own words, they would say. It was all underwhelming. Blake Bortles was a turnover machine in the first half. Every time they seemed to make some progression, they would find a way to step on their own feet. It was a mess. They were out-coached, outplayed, whatever, cliches you want to talk about, it happened. But as far, you brought up what's going to project for the rest of the year. I think, game 3 becomes a do-or-die situation. Now, the good news is, typically you don't like an early bye, but after week 4 in London, they get a bye week that they can kind of regroup. They'll get Colvin back, and hopefully they have Ivory back in the mix and all that stuff. I don't think Ivory would have made a difference in this game. I don't think Colvin would have made a difference in this game. But having those pieces and kind of getting a week to kind of reflect on the thing, if you can go 1-3 or 2-2 to end this stretch, I think you could potentially make a run. I mean, the Texans really seem to be the only cohesive unit in the AFC South. So, I mean, it's up for grabs. You saw what the Rams did today after being embarrassed in the first week of the season. They beat the Seahawks, who are the favorite to win the division.
Although the Jaguars have not started out well this year, the AFC South is exactly what it is, a crap show. So we'll see how that works out with the Colts, the Titans, and if the Texans continue to be as good as they've seemed so far. Who do you think had the best game today, although no one really played well at all, but who stood out the most to you?
I would say I thought Julius Thomas played well. He was getting open quite quite often. After that, he was held a couple of times. And then on defense, I thought Yannick Ngakoue showed a lot of good burst in his rush. I thought he showed really good end. That strip sack was earned. You know, we could talk about the two sacks from Fowler, but those kind of seem to be, you know, products of good coverage, products of Phillip Rivers getting too patient in the pocket. But that Ngakoue sack strip was huge. And it honestly bailed out the offense who fumbled the ball about a couple of plays earlier, so previous possession.
Yeah, speaking of Yannick and Dante, if we're going to talk about some of the young defenders, what did you see out of Jalen Ramsey today, as well as Miles Jack, who finally got to see the field at middle linebacker?
I mean, Jalen, that's going to be better probably for the coach's tape. Miles is going to be better for the coach's tape just because I really didn't focus in on him. I thought he did okay with his run fits when I did see him in there. It's just tough to get an angle sometimes on those linebackers. And I haven't rewatched the game yet. So to give you a full evaluation of Miles Jack would not be fair to him or probably to you guys. But as far as Jalen, I thought Jalen did really well. I thought he was really physical in coverage. He pressed when he needed to press. He out-muscled some wide receivers because these are like lankier wide receivers, but they're taller. So I thought it was a good matchup for him to begin with, and I thought he did relatively well.
So back to the offense, I was mentioning earlier, I think that they've kind of taken a step back, at least comparing to last year where, you know, Blake Bortles threw for 35 touchdowns, Allen Robinson was the Pro Bowl receiver, and this offense really seemed to be taking that next step into being a top offense in the NFL. But two games in, they've had a lot of questionable play calling and just some clear struggles on offense, including, I believe, four total turnovers in two games from Blake Bortles. Do you think that this offense has kind of taken a step back?
I don't know if they've taken a step back is more of or more of a way that they're experimenting a little bit more. I don't think they're focusing necessarily on their strengths. They're trying to accommodate so many weapons, and they're trying to also outthink the competition. I mean, people have seen what the Allens can do. They've seen what Julius can do. They've seen what Blake can do. You know, we talked about it off air, but you said that Marquise Lee got more targets than both the Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns. And that right there is telling you they thought that they could exploit the fact that really Lee doesn't have a ton of tape. So, I mean, they went for that. It seemed like they got a little cute with the way they used Yeldon today. I don't know if this offense is taking a step back, but it seems like they're overthinking a lot.
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean by that. Because, yeah, since they have Lee back and they're trying to develop Yeldon more, you've got to understand as well that they're just going to try and experiment those guys. So I guess I'd say you're right on that rather than the regression, and we'll just see as the season goes on. So on to injuries. We had a couple of injuries today, and the most major ones were to Kelvin Beachum, who looked like he tripped over Luke Jokel's foot at first when we first saw it, and we thought that he was grabbing onto his knee, but it ended up being what seemed to be a head and knee injury. So can you start us on that?
Yeah, we were told by the Jaguars that Kelvin suffered a concussion, was taken to a local hospital for further evaluation. Turns out all the tests after the concussion, like the advanced tests, were negative. So that's good for his long-term projection. I mean, we don't know if he's going to be questionable for next week. I would think so. But if that's the case, Patrick Omame would likely play left tackle, and I think they'd have to make a move because really right now they would only have seven healthy offensive linemen and only one of them can really swing tackle. So, I mean, you got A.J. Cann who can play tackle and you've got Jokel that can play tackle, but it'll be interesting to see what they do move-wise with that.
And then what about Jared Audrick? Because he started off the game with an elbow injury and came back and played through it, and he actually ended up getting into a bit of a hissy fit on the sidelines, which I wanted to talk about afterwards. But after the game, it said that he was not able to move his elbow very much and was having a lot of pain. So do you know any more on that?
I don't, unfortunately. I was not at the stadium today, so I can't ask him about it.
Right. Do you know as to any reason as to why Jared Audrick was given that that unsportsmanlike conduct penalty? I just seemed to miss that. I knew he was giving a big hissy fit on the sidelines, whether it be with other players, coaches, referees. But do you know what was going on there?
I think he was frustrated with the penalty call, or at least that it's what I've read. And it seemed like that at the time, but then it also kind of seemed like he was frustrated by the overall loss. You know what? It's funny because he seemed to be the only guy like genuinely concerned or frustrated with the fact that he was being embarrassed on television. So, I mean, you know, I know Jared very, very well. He and I have had several conversations regarding, you know, the team and how much he cares about the team and everything like that, because he genuinely does. He's told me there'd be no other team he'd want to play with, no players he'd want to play with. I just think he, you know, as a veteran guy who, you know, is now in his seventh season, you know, your clock is only so long and you're playing for a team that's constantly set of penalty calls and seems to never go your way. You're going to get frustrated.
Right. So with the couple minutes we have left, I've got one more question. There's been a lot of talking on Twitter and everything, and we always end up being wrong when we say it, but a lot of people are starting to question the coaching staff and the leadership of this team. I won't ask you whether you think anyone's going to be fired this week or anything like that, because that's just unrealistic as it's week two. Greg Roman being fired in Buffalo was a once-in-a-while thing that you usually don't see at week two, but what do you think the future of this coaching staff is down the line?
Well, what I would ask you in return is, what do you think is the right move to make? If you're Shad Khan, you've kept Gus Bradley all offseason. You're going to fire him after two games? I mean, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. You know, you're getting up on
right.
on your investment of an entire year after one-eighth of its completion when you've allowed, you know, 12 and 36 to happen. You know what I mean? So it's like, what do you
– Right.
I don't know what you get out of that. That said, though, then I would turn it back on you and say, well, do we need to use a scapegoat? Do we – because sometimes it makes sense to use a scapegoat like Roman. I don't know if that was necessarily the right scapegoat, but you look and you're like, well, do you fire – you know, your wide receivers coach, you're not going to fire Sullivan. You're not going to fire your offensive line coach, Marone. You're not going to, you know what I mean? It's like, you're not going to fire your quarterbacks coach. You got so much out of Blake last year. And then on defense, I didn't think the defense was absolutely horrible. There were some terrible calls, but you're also not going to give Todd Wash the yank after two games. It's just not going to happen. So it's more of regrouping, figuring out what went into the thought process here, and doing some self-reevaluation. It's going to be an interesting Tell the Truth Monday for them.
You're right on that. And, yeah, going into week two, even though a lot of the fans will be calling for Bradley's head and calling for, you know, heads of anyone that was involved the embarrassing loss today, you know, we have to be realistic and we've got to look forward and say, like, this team, whether we want it or not, is going to give Bradley more chances because it's only week two. Like you said, only an eighth of the season's gone so far. They've got a lot of time. So thank you for joining, Mike. Always great to be able to talk to you and catch up on the Jaguars.
Yeah, sure thing, man. Thanks for having me on. It was fun.
Mm-hmm. And that'll do it for today's show of Keep Chopping, doing the Jaguars versus Chargers game. Thank you for joining us. And later in the week, we'll have host Bo Jackson and Hank Jones come on and discuss the Jaguars-Ravens game. Thank you for joining.